There's a very specific, a very haunting kind of silence that happens in crypto. It's not the market crashing. It's not the noise of some Discord server going crazy. It's much more personal.
I think I know exactly the silence you're talking about.
It's that moment right after you hit send. You're sending a friend some money or maybe moving funds to a new wallet. You copy the address, you type in the amount, you click the button, you see the balance drop, and then you wait.
And you wait.
5 minutes go by, 10. You're refreshing the page. Your friend texts, "Hey, nothing's come through yet." You check the Block Explorer, and it says success, but the money, it's just gone. It's not in your wallet. It's not in theirs. It's like it just evaporated.
That's the phantom transaction. And honestly, that scenario is the nightmare that keeps so many smart people from even touching this stuff.
And the worst part is, it wasn't a hacker. It wasn't a scam. It was you. It was one click on a drop-down menu you didn't even realize was the most dangerous button in the whole app.
That's exactly what we're tackling today. We're doing a deep dive into a module from the first Crypto Steps course. Specifically, we're looking at Lesson 6 and Exercise 6.
Which is all about something called network selection.
It sounds dry as toast, doesn't it?
Sounds like, IT department work. But after reading this, I realized it's actually the boss level of basic crypto. If you mess this up, nothing else you do matters.
It really is the gatekeeper. So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We're going to figure out why funds get lost, how to make sure it never happens to you. And this is the part that surprised me, how mastering this one thing can save you a ridiculous amount of money on fees.
Oh, the fee part is wild. We will definitely get to that. But first, we have to tackle the main problem. The source material uses this fantastic analogy of a delivery service to explain what a blockchain network actually is.
It's such a great comparison. Because I think most people just picture crypto as one big cloud, like email. I can send an email to you, whether you use Gmail or Outlook or whatever, it just works.
Right. It's all just the internet.
But blockchains don't work like that. They work like shipping companies. Lesson 6 compares it to FedEx versus UPS.
Okay, let's play this out. So I have a package that's my crypto, my USDC, or whatever.
And you want to send it to your friend's house, you've got options. You could use FedEx. They've got their own trucks, their own planes, their own system.
Or I could use UPS. Totally different trucks, different planes, different uniforms.
Exactly. Or a local courier. Now, here's the crucial point the source makes. These networks are sealed. They do not talk to each other. The FedEx driver does not have a key to the UPS drop-off box.
So if I hand my package to a FedEx guy, but I slap a label on it for a secure bin inside a UPS facility.
The FedEx driver goes to the address, looks around for a FedEx bin, doesn't see one, and well, in the real world, he'd probably bring it back. In crypto, he basically just drops it on the sidewalk and drives away.
That is a terrifying image. Here's
Yeah.
your money. Hope it works out.
It's what we call chain isolation. If you're sending something on the Ethereum network, think of it as an Ethereum truck. It can only deliver to an Ethereum address. It can't just, hop lanes and drop it off on the Solana network because that's where you wanted it to go.
I think this is where the confusion comes in, though, because the address just looks like a string of random characters. 0x something something.
Right, it's just gibberish to us.
So you just assume, well, I have the right house number. The package will get there.
But the house number is useless if you're in the wrong city. You can have the right address for one main street, but if you're looking for it in New York and the house is actually in Chicago, you're not finding it.
Okay, so that's the infrastructure part. But then the source brings up this whole other layer of complexity, which I found even more, I don't know, treacherous. This idea of a token multiverse.
Ah, yes, the same token trap.
Right. They use USDC as the example. Now, I use USDC. To me, it's a digital dollar. It's worth a buck. But the source lists USDC as existing on Ethereum, on Polygon, on Arbitrum, on Solana.
A dozen different
It's
chains.
everywhere. But why? Why isn't there just the USDC?
Think of it like a currency format. A US dollar is the value, but that value can exist as a paper bill in your pocket, as a number in your bank account, or as a paper check.
Okay, they're all worth $1.
They're all dollars. But try putting a paper bill into the credit card reader at the store,
Right, it doesn't work.
or try tapping a paper check on the NFC reader. It's the same asset, but the medium is completely incompatible. Ethereum USDC is what's called an ERC-20 token. Solana USDC is an SPL token. They're built on totally different programming standards.
So if I have Polygon USDC in my wallet and I try to send it to my account on an exchange that's only set up to listen for Ethereum USDC,
To the exchange, you're basically invisible. Their system is the card reader, and you're just waving a paper check at it. The funds might technically arrive at the address, but they arrive on the Polygon network. And if the exchange's software isn't looking there, your balance stays at zero.
That just feels like a massive design flaw. Shouldn't the system stop me? Shouldn't it just say, hey, you can't do that?
Ideally, yes. And modern wallets are getting better, but, and this is a really big but, some of these networks have compatible address formats. This is a key insight. Ethereum, Polygon, Arbitrum, they're all what we call EVM compatible.
EVM, for Ethereum Virtual Machine.
Correct. Which means your address on Ethereum looks exactly the same as your address on Polygon. It's the same 0x string.
Oh, that's dangerous. So the wallet sees the address and just thinks, yep, that looks like a valid address, and lets the transaction go through.
Precisely. It has no idea you meant for it to arrive on a different network. It just sees a valid format and hits send.
Okay, let's use a concrete example from the source to make this stick. Exercise 6 has this case study, the network mix-up, with two people, Sam and Jamie.
Yes, this case study is the perfect way to see the costly click in action.
So scenario A is Sam. Sam is sending USDC on the Ethereum network. Old school, reliable.
Right. Sam asks the receiver, hey, what network do you support? The receiver says Ethereum. Sam goes to his wallet, selects Ethereum ERC20 from the menu. Simple.
Hit send.
And it works. The source notes it costs about $2 in fees. We'll come back to that. And it arrives in a few minutes. Transaction complete. No drama.
Now, let's talk about Jamie.
Oh, poor Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie is scenario B. He's also sending USDC, but the receiver gives him an address that's for the Solana network.
And Jamie just pastes it in.
Well, let's use an even more common and dangerous scenario based on what we just talked about. Let's say the receiver's address works on both Ethereum and Polygon, but the receiver is an exchange that only supports Ethereum deposits for that account. Ah, I see where this is going. So Jamie selects Polygon in his wallet because he sees the fee is way cheaper.
Exactly. He's trying to be smart. He sends it to that valid-looking address, but he sends it over the Polygon network. And
disaster.
The funds leave his wallet.
They travel down the Polygon highway. They arrive at the correct address, but on the Polygon map. Meanwhile, the recipient is standing at that same address, but on the Ethereum map.
It's the parallel universe problem.
That's exactly it. The recipient checks their Ethereum mailbox. It's empty. Meanwhile, the money is sitting in the Polygon mailbox, which they don't have a key for or might not even know exists.
So where is the money? Is it lost forever or just stuck?
This is where we need to get specific. The source actually breaks this down into three different scenarios of loss. And the difference between them is, well, the difference between a bad day and a catastrophic one.
Okay, walk me through the levels of pain.
Scenario one is the exchange mismatch. This is what just happened to Jamie. You send funds to an exchange on a network they don't support for your account. So can I just call customer service? Hello, I messed up.
You can try, but think about what you're asking. For them to get those funds, they might have to manually export the private keys for their massive institutional wallet, move them to a whole different environment, sweep your tiny amount of funds, and then credit you.
That sounds like a huge security risk for them.
It is. Yeah. So a lot of them will just say, sorry, we can't help you. Or they'll charge an enormous recovery fee, like $100 or more. Sometimes they say, we might support that network next year. Maybe you'll get it then.
So the money isn't gone. It's just in purgatory.
Purgatory is the perfect word. Now, scenario two is the wallet mismatch. This is actually the good news story.
Okay, I could use some good news.
Let's say you send tokens on the Arbitrum network to your own personal wallet, like MetaMask. But you haven't added Arbitrum to your wallet settings yet?
So I open my wallet, I see a zero balance, and I start to panic.
Total panic. But because it's self-custody, you hold the keys, the master recovery phrase, you're in control. The funds are safe on the blockchain, your wallet app just isn't tuned to the right frequency.
So I just have to change the channel.
Exactly. You go into the settings, click Add Network, select Arbitrum, and poof, your money appears.
Wow, that right there is the argument for self-custody. If you hold the keys, you can fix your own mistakes.
You can. You have the power to cross the multiverse and find your money, as long as the networks have that shared address structure.
And what about scenario three?
That's the burn. Total incompatibility. Sending Bitcoin to an Ethereum address, it's like trying to put diesel in a gasoline car. Usually the software will stop you, the nozzle doesn't fit. But if you somehow force it, the transaction is just gone. The math doesn't work.
It really hammers home that you are your own bank, but you're also the teller, the security guard, and the entire IT department.
It's a lot of hats, but there's a huge upside to wearing them, which brings us to the second half of the source material, the fees.
Yes. Let's pivot. We've scared everyone enough. Why would I want to deal with all this complexity?
Because the price difference for the same service is just staggering. Phase 3 of the exercise has this great apply it section about sending $20.
Right, the $20 test.
So you need to send 20 bucks to a friend. You open your wallet, you go to the network selection menu.
And I'm looking at the chart from the source here. To send that $20 on the Ethereum mainnet, the fee is listed as $3.
$3, okay.
To send it on Arbitrum, which is a layer 2, the fee is 10 cents. And to send it on Solana, the fee is 1 penny.
Just pause on that. $3 versus 1 cent. That is a 300 times price difference to do the exact same thing.
If I choose Ethereum, I'm paying a 15% tax on my transaction. That's insane. Who in their right mind would do that?
Well, millions of people every day. Because Ethereum is the FedEx in our story, it's the most established, most decentralized, most widely supported network, but it's congested. It's like trying to drive a truck through Midtown Manhattan at rush hour. You're going to pay a premium.
And Solana is like the high-speed rail.
Exactly. It's built for speed and volume.
So, logically, I should just pick Solana every single time. 1 cent fee. No-brainer.
Logically, yes. But here's the catch that brings this whole conversation full circle. You can only choose the cheap network if the receiver can accept it.
Right. I can't just send it however I want.
The receiver builds the landing pad. If your friend says, sorry, I only have an Ethereum wallet, and you try to be clever and send it via Solana to save $2.99.
I went back to being Jamie from Scenario B. Yep. I save $3 on the fee, and I lose the whole $20 principal.
And that is the absolute definition of the costly click, penny-wise and pound-foolish.
So the real conversation needs to happen before you even open your wallet. It's not just, what's your address? It has to be, what's your address? And hey, can you accept this on Arbitrum so I don't get gouged on fees?
That's it, exactly. It turns the transaction into a little negotiation. Hey, if you set up a Solana wallet real quick, I can send this to you instantly for basically free. Otherwise, I'm going to have to deduct the $3 gas fee from what I owe you.
I actually like that approach. It's fair.
It is.
Okay. We've covered the horror stories, the tech, the economics. Let's make this super practical. Someone is listening right now. They're about to make a transfer. What is the mental checklist?
The source calls it best practices, but I think of it as a pilot's pre-flight check. It's 5 simple steps.
Okay, step 1.
Verify support. Do not guess. If you're sending to an exchange, go to the deposit page for that specific coin and look at the networks they list. If it's not on that list, do not send it.
Okay, don't assume.
Got it. Step 2.
Match networks. This sounds so obvious, but you have to keep it 1-to-1. If you select Polygon on the withdrawal side, you must be depositing to a Polygon address. Don't try to get creative.
Keep it simple. Step 3. Read the warnings. I know. We all click past them. But exchanges put those pop-up boxes there for a reason. Please ensure the destination address supports the X network.
That's the box everyone instinctively closes in 0.2 seconds.
Don't. Just take 1 second and read it. That box is the last line of defense between you and a very bad day.
Okay. Step 4. This is the big one.
The test transaction. This is the golden rule. If it's a new address, a new network, or a large amount of money, send $1 first.
It feels so inefficient, though. Like, I have to pay the fee twice.
Think of it as an insurance premium. You pay a 1 cent fee to send a dollar. If it arrives, great. You have cryptographic proof that the connection works. Now you can send the rest with confidence. If that dollar doesn't arrive, well, congratulations. You just spent $1 to avoid losing $500.
That's a great way to put it. The world's cheapest insurance policy.
Exactly.
And the final step, step 5.
Control. Whenever you can, use self-custody wallets where you control the private keys. Like we said, having those keys can be an undo button for some of these mistakes. If your money is on an exchange, you are completely at their mercy.
So, verify, match, read, test, and control.
That's the checklist.
You know, when we started, I just thought of this as a technical problem, a bad UI that needs fixing. But it's really a reminder that we are still in the, the dial-up phase of crypto.
We really are. We're in the phase where you have to know how the protocols work just to send the equivalent of an email.
That's a perfect parallel. Right now, we have to care which truck is carrying our money. But looking at the source, seeing how many networks USDC is on now, do you think this complexity is permanent?
That is the big question. There's this idea developers are working on called chain abstraction. The goal is that eventually your wallet will handle all this complexity for you. You'll just say, send $20 to Bob, and the wallet will automatically find the cheapest, fastest route, bridge the funds in the background, and it'll just arrive.
That sounds like the dream, but...
But if the wallet handles it automatically, who gets to decide what's best? Do you trust the wallet to always pick the 1 cent option, or will it route you through a partner network that costs 50 cents because they have a deal?
Convenient and the cost of control?
It's always the trade-off. So even when the tech gets simpler, understanding why one route costs more than another and how the plumbing works, that knowledge will always give you an edge.
That feels like the real lesson here. If you want to be your own bank, you have to understand how the vault door works.
I can have said it better myself.
Listeners, next time you're staring at that send button, just take a breath. Check the network. Maybe send a dollar first. It's worth it. Thanks for diving in with us.
Safe sending, everyone.